Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the May 5th Zoning Board of Adjustment meeting. We presently have five members here and one on the way. I want to welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us. Before we start, I'd like to ask if anyone has a cell phone, please make sure you silence it or put it on vibrate, including up here on the dais. And if for any reason someone has to take a call, I'd appreciate if they would take it out of the chamber. Thank you. Why don't we go ahead and start, Mr. Belush, and why don't we have you take attendance, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you noted, we do have five members present currently. Mr. Jim Silvers is on his way, so we do anticipate him to be here shortly and to proceed with the meeting. But before we begin, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Stephen Rothstein, who can let members of the public know how they may participate today in virtually or in person.
Sure. Thank you, Michael. Good morning, all. Good morning, Chair, public. Today's meeting of the Board of Adjustment has been scheduled in a hybrid format with a quorum of the board physically present in the commission chambers and applicant staff and members of the public appearing either individually or in person or virtually via the Zoom platform. For those wishing to participate via the Zoom platform webinar, please dial 888-853-5257, which is a toll-free number, and enter the webinar ID, which is 828-6961-5309, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 828-6961-5309. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they are using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if they are participating by phone. Before swearing in all those that are testifying today, I'm going to advise all of the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you are appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before speaking to the board. You do not have to register as a lobbyist if you are speaking only on your behalf and not any other party, or if you are testifying as an expert witness, providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you are appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you are an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you are appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. At this time, I'd like to swear in those members that are here in chambers that will be testifying today. If you could please stand and raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you all. Please be seated.
Okay, thank you, Mr. City Attorney. Next, we do have a request for continuance or withdrawal on ZBA 22-0143. Mr. Belush?
Sure. So this for ZBA 22-0143 for 125 to 153 Collins Avenue, this application has been deferred, and it will be renoticed for a future meeting if needed. So the board does not need to take any action on this item.
Okay, so we need to vote automatically. It's automatically.
Yeah, it's automatically deferred, okay. So no action is required. But we also have not done the minutes yet, the after action.
Yeah, yes, let me go back. That is true. So in your package that was sent out, you had minutes for the April 14th meeting. Hopefully you had an opportunity to review those meetings. With that being said, I'd entertain a motion to approve. Okay. Motion by Mr. Aronson, second by Ms. Malikoff. All in favor? Opposed? Motion passed. Thank you. Mr. Belush, do we have any requests for extension of time?
No, we do not.
Any discussion items?
Nope.
Progress report?
No.
Modification of previously approved board order?
No.
Continued items?
No.
Open and continued items?
No.
Okay, with that being said, we have our first application will be coming up next. and that will be ZBA 23-0145, 4454 North Meridian Avenue. I'd like to ask Mr. Belouz to go ahead and tee up that item, and then he'll hand it over to the applicant for a presentation. Mr. Belouz, thank you.
Sure, thank you. This item is ZBA 23-0145 for 4454 North Meridian Avenue. This is an application requesting an after-the-fact variance from the side setback requirements for the construction of a pergola structure in the front yard of the existing home. Now, this has some unusual and interesting history. Back on December of 2021, the applicant applied for a building permit for the construction of the pergola located on the south side of the property. The permit application, as is the case with all building permits, was submitted through the building department, which then assigns plans for review by the various departments. In this case, for some reason, the planning department was not assigned to review the plans, and on February 7th of last year, the permit was issued without planning review. The permit was subsequently constructed, and it wasn't until the planning department was called out for final inspection that the issue of the setback was brought to the attention of the owners. Now, it was through no fault of the property owner that the planning department was not assigned to review the building permit for the structure. So in order to correct this, the applicant's now requesting the variance. So the code does require, based upon the width of the property, a 10-foot side setback for the construction of any structures, including the subject pergola. And that structure was constructed with a 5-foot setback. As noted in our report, the footprint and location of the existing home does create practical difficulties as it pertains to meeting this requirement, especially considering the fact that there is a pool that was constructed also in the front yard, which was the most appropriate location based upon the limited availability of the rear yard. We do believe that the home does embody the low-scale character of the neighborhood, and its retention is important for the neighborhood. So we do feel like this is a minimal variance request. And regardless of the after-the-fact nature of it, if this had come to you initially, it's something that we would have also recommended in favor of. Now, as part of the board packages, there are photos of the pergola included, as well as a site plan that notes the location and the setbacks. With that, I'll turn it over to the homeowner who's here, if you'd like to
Mr. Belouz, before we do that, I need to ask the board members, are there any disclosures? No? Okay, with that being said, who will be presenting? Mr. Samick? Floor is yours. How long do you need? 5 minutes?
I think less than that. As Mr. Belouz noted, and is noted by Mr. Mooney in the memo that was prepared and provided to the board, the reason we're here is by no fault of myself and my wife as the homeowners. This is a result of an error by the city in not properly routing the permit application that we had submitted. And so we submitted building out the permit application, it was approved, constructed the pergola to the permit that was issued, and it was only after the fact, as noted in the staff's memo, that the staff routed the final inspection to the planning department, who then came out and noted the issue with the setback. So we're now in a situation where we have been good homeowners and actually come to the city to get a permit, unlike many in this community, and we're effectively being punished by having to spend over a year to build a pergola by trying to do the right thing. So we've submitted with the packet letters from our neighbors who are in support of the variance, and I would be happy to entertain any questions, but respectfully request that the board grant the variance.
Okay, thank you. With that being said, we'll go ahead and first open it up for any public comment. Do we have anyone here in the chambers, public comment? Anybody on Zoom, Mr. Belouz?
There are two people that have had their hand raised. I'm not sure if it's for this application, but I'll call them. The first is Nicholas Perano.
Mr. Perano? Are you speaking on this item?
You're muted, Nicholas.
No, sir. Not for this item, sir.
Okay, thank you. The next caller we have is Viviana Rodriguez.
Yes, not speaking for this item.
Okay, thank you. Okay. With that, we have no other public comment.
Okay, Thank you. With that being said, I'll go ahead and open it to the board to be recognized through the chair for any questions or comments.
Hi.
Mr. Essien?
Hi. I just want to ask you, can you explain to me your process of over a year of waiting for this pergola? Because I get super frustrated as well when I hear stories like this. What took a year? What was the process like to take a year to get a permit for a pergola?
The various engineering studies that were required, changes to that come back from the city, and with respect to the planning department, it is a lengthy and difficult process to go through the building department and try and get permitted items done. And it is difficult to get contractors and licensed individuals to perform smaller jobs on Miami Beach, given the difficulties in doing that. So it was a long process to get a permit. As you see in the memo, this permit was submitted in December of 2021. And wow. The final inspection the issue was not noted until November 2022 when
a year later, basically.
A year later is when the planning department came out for their inspection. And then between November and, March, I think, we worked with Michael and Tom to try and get this set up. Then your April meeting did not occur.
This was just for the pergola?
Just for the pergola.
Tom, can you come up here and tell us how...
I want to be respectful of Mr. Moody and Mr. Belush, who are very professional.
Listen, I'm very respectful of Mr. Moody. I'm a big fan. But I really want to work on streamlining this process across the board because it's a pergola. So how can we –
I think the issue on the permitting is something obviously that would have to be done separately. I think that what's before you, the variance, as we indicate in the memo, we believe that the practical difficulties and hardship criteria have been satisfied due to unforeseen circumstances and circumstances outside of the owner's control. With regard to how this permit should have been routed and any similar permits like that, I think obviously that's a separate conversation. But in this particular instance and similar types of instances, it started when, for whatever reason, it wasn't routed to planning. And that sort of set off a chain of events that was outside of everybody's control. Unbeknownst to him, he thought it was permitted. He got a permit for it. He built it. And then planning was assigned to the inspection. And when our zoning inspector went out, they realized that it had never been approved by planning, so they couldn't approve the inspection. And again, it's no fault of the property owner. That's something that the city needed to correct. I know that the city is working diligently on improving intake so that we avoid things like this moving forward. And I believe we are making progress on that, but that is something that the city does need to do a better job of at intake to make sure that all the applicable disciplines are properly routed to.
Right. I feel you. I'm going through a similar situation with a property where I live in, and I get frustrated just like you are. And I would love to see benchmarks, eventually a different conversation, but of saying, like, what is a target turnaround time for things like this, because this guy is building a pergola. It's taken a year to get a permit. It's ridiculous. So I feel you. And I just want to improve with Tom and everybody else that process, because we can't continue to have our city have this reputation.
Okay, so noted. Thank you, Mr. Essien. Other comments, Mr. Nagler?
Yeah, I have a question for staff. Sorry. Question for staff. It was stated that if this had come before us earlier, the recommendation would have been to approve. Would this have come to us earlier?
So if this had been identified as an issue, if this had been routed to planning, we reviewed it, would have been denied with the requirements noted. And due to the location of the pool, his only option would be to remove the trellis or ask for a variance, because there's not enough room to construct the trellis and comply with the 10-foot setback requirements, because the pool is also in this location.
Okay, so unless they changed the plans, gentlemen would have had to have been here regardless. It's just it would have been earlier.
Yeah, I think I can't speak for him in terms of what he would have done or if he would have abandoned the process, but if he had made it, if he had discussed this with me at the very beginning, we noted this was a variance, especially because this involves the retention of an older home. It's not a, this is not a, a variance associated with the construction of a brand new home where you can, you know, move your home around to accommodate the trellis or pergola structure that you need.
Thank you. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagler. Ms. Malacloth?
I have
one question.
Okay. Ms. Aronson, go ahead.
Does the overhang on the pergola overhang the neighbor's property?
No. It is all, it's all within our property. It, it's just not within the, it's just within the 10.
Mr. Aronson, I think your mic was off.
I asked whether the overhang actually overhangs the neighbor's property. Your answer was no.
No, it does not overhang the neighbor's property. It, and as noted in the staff's memo, it is consistent with, it's a 1949 home. When the home was constructed, there was a 5-foot setback. And so the pergola is consistent with the 5-foot setback of the existing home. It does not encroach any neighbor property.
And I'll just make a comment. You know, I did go by the house, and thank you for your patience and doing things the right way, like they're supposed to be done. It does. It looks very good, very attractive, and you know, I can see you've got, you know, the hedge up, and why the neighbors wouldn't complain, because whether or not it was 5 feet over or not, I don't think would have made a big difference to them. So, you know, I don't see any issue with that. And based on the circumstances, I'm gonna be a yes on this. Anyone else have any other comments before I ask for a motion?
We have a motion. We just need a second.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Ms. Malakoff made the motion for approval.
Ms. Malakoff made a motion to move the item?
Yes.
Okay. First by Ms. Malakoff.
Second.
Second by Mr. Aronson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Sorry. Samick.
Okay.
With that, I think we should take a recess until Mr. Silvers arrives.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and take a 5-minute recess, 10-minute recess.
Or wait, or just until he arrives.
Until he arrives. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and reconvene. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. We apologize for that. We do have a full board with one opening, I should say. The next item is going to be new application, ZBA 23-0146, 1330 15th Street. This is an appeal. I just want to tee up the procedure and how we're going to handle this so everybody on the board and in the public knows. Mr. Belush will go ahead and introduce the item and explain the issue involving this appeal. The appellate will make a presentation to us. We'll give you 15 minutes initially. We will then have Mr. Mooney from the city present, give 15 minutes for that. The appellant can then cross-examine Mr. Mooney, and the appellant can also rebut Mr. Mooney and may call additional witnesses as needed. And then we will open it up to the public hearing. We'll close the public hearing, and then I'll open it up to the board for questions through the chair. Any questions on the procedures? Just want to make sure everybody knew how we were going to handle this appeal. With that being said, Mr. Belush, will you please go ahead and introduce the item for us? Thank you.
Sure, I'll read the item into the record. It's ZBA 23-0146 for 1330 15th Street. This is an application appealing a determination of the planning director in connection with a proposal to reinstate a non-conforming suite hotel use on a property located in a multifamily residential district. This appeal has been filed pursuant to sections 118-9 and 118-397 of the city's land development regulations. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Thangleville for the presentation, his presentation.
Let's go ahead and put 15 minutes on the clock, please, Mr. City Attorney.
Yes, unfortunately, the clock is malfunctioning today, so I'm going to be doing it on
old-fashioned way, on the iPhone.
Old-fashioned way on the phone. And I'll just try not to interrupt during the, you know, anyone's presentation, but I'll just let you know when we're out of time. Or I'll, for everyone, I'll just like hold up one finger for 1 minute so that I don't interrupt the presentation.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, Mr. Thangleville, if I'm saying that right, I'll thank
you. Yes, Thangleville, right? Yeah.
The floor is yours, sir. Thank you.
I just wanted to wait until you guys got the exhibits. All right. Good morning, and thank you to the board for your time today. I am the owner and manager of the LLC that owns 1330 15th Street, Miami Beach, Florida. And I come before you today to appeal a determination by the planning director that, if upheld, would permanently destroy my business. I know the documents distributed. I know the documents distributed likely have this information, but here is a very brief introduction. The property was purchased on November 15, 2019 by 1330 15th Street LLC. I am the manager of this LLC, which is 100% owned by Thungavale Family 2006 Irrevocable Trust, which has myself and my brother as sole trustees and beneficiaries. The property was properly licensed as a hotel by the state of Florida, Miami-Dade County, and City of Miami Beach at the time of purchase. In August 2020, an ordinance was passed to make short-term rentals and hotels not allowed by zoning in the West Avenue overlay. The hotel use of the property became non-conforming after this time. The planning director has determined that 1330 15th Street abandoned its non-conforming use hotel by adopting a conforming use of apartments. Unfortunately, the planning director has based his entire determination on a forged document. I submitted the correct BTR application to Damian Gallo, the permit doctor, on November 18, 2019. This is the man I hired to be my permit expediter. Somehow, a forged BTR application was submitted to the City of Miami Beach sometime between November 18, 2019 and December 27, 2019. Before this board, I would like to show you evidence that this document was indeed a forgery. Here is the first page of the BTR application that the planning director has based his decision off of. If you'd like to view it in your hard copies, it is a staff report exhibit CMB-F. As you can see, the revision number shows September 13th, 2016 in the bottom left-hand corner. Here is the second page of the same exhibit. As you can see, it is a totally different revision number, dated October 12, 2004. This means that these two pages could not have come from the same document. I should also mention that the handwriting of both of these pages are completely different. Again, you may view this for yourself in the Planning Director's Staff Report, Exhibit CMB-F. By comparison, here is the first page of the actual BTR application I submitted to Damian Gallo on November 18, 2019. If you'd like to see in hard copy, this is Exhibit A of my response to Planning Director. That's the one that was just handed out. The revision number in the bottom left-hand corner is dated October 12, 2004. This is the second page of the same exhibit. As you can see, the revision numbers are dated the same, October 12, 2004. This is a legitimate document signed by me. Whoever forged this document took my legitimate signature page, hand-wrote a new page one, and slipped my signature page as page two to create a new false document. I believe this person to be Damian Gallo. I reported this crime to the Miami Beach Police Department on December 5, 2022. I'm continuing to work with the police to bring this man to justice. However, it is not possible for this document to suffice as my voluntary intention to abandon the hotel use of my property. Intent cannot be proven by the result of a crime. The planning director was made aware of the illegitimacy of this document by both his attorney, Nick Kalergas, and the city attorney office at least 3 months ago, yet decided to completely ignore it. Unfortunately for the planning director, there's more evidence that I never intended to abandon the use of my property as a hotel. If it pleases the board, I would like to turn your attention to Exhibit I of Aaron Resnick's letter dated April 17, 2023, which are email communications between me and City of Miami Beach employees on May 19, 2020. On May 19, 2020, Tania Williams and Jeannie Castor of the City of Miami Beach emailed me back and forth multiple times requesting signed versions of a resort tax application and smoke detector form as final items to issue my BTR. These documents are shown in Exhibit J and Exhibit L of the same letter. Both documents were provided to them nearly instantly, clearly marking either hotel or short-term rental as use. The planning director openly admits that the city received this resort tax application that showed hotel as use, dated April 12, 2020. Somehow, despite multiple documents showing that I requested hotel as use, the city incorrectly issued me a BTR as an apartment. This was an obvious mistake by the city. To compound the mistake, the planning director has waffled numerous times regarding how such a mistake could occur. 1330 15th Street maintained a transient apartment license from the state of Florida from December 18, 2019 to the present, which is Exhibit H in the documents that were just handed out. The state definition of a transient apartment is any apartment building or complex of buildings in which more than 25% of the units are advertised or held out to the public as available for transient occupancy. In fact, the transient apartment license is issued by the Division of Hotels and Restaurants by the state of Florida. The planning director and Ricardo Guzman initially tried to argue that the resort tax account and BTR account for 1330 15th Street had been created in accordance with the state license. Exhibits F and G are timelines produced by Mr. Mooney and Mr. Guzman. Before the planning director changed his argument in the staff report and claimed that the state license has no relevance. The planning director has changed his explanation of the resort tax account at least three separate times. The planning department claimed that the BTR and resort tax accounts were created based on my Florida state license. From Ricardo Guzman's email, which is Exhibit G, also on May 19th, 2020, a new resort tax account was set up by the finance department. Both BTR and RTX accounts were created based on the Florida state license, which is for an apartment building. As we know, this license is not for an apartment building. It is for a transient apartment. The city issued the wrong BTR based on an obvious error. However, even if the BTR application that the planning director has presented was legitimate, which it is not, the use of 1330 15th Street never could have or should have been changed without the approval of the building official. The planning director has asserted that the change in use for the property approved by the city in December 2019 was considered a change from a more intense use hotel to a less intense use apartment. Unfortunately, this argument has no legal validity. Florida Building Code Section 111.1 states, a building or structure shall not be used or occupied, and a change in the existing use or occupancy classification of a building or a structure or portion thereof shall not be made until the building official has issued a certificate of occupancy, therefore as provided herein. Issuance of a certificate of occupancy shall not be construed as an approval of a violation of the provisions of this code or of other ordinances of the jurisdiction. There are no caveats made for more or for less intense or more intense uses. Any change in use whatsoever requires building official approval. The building official never approved a change of use for 1330 15th Street. And in fact, you can turn to Exhibit J of the documents that you just received, which is an email chain between C.D. Davis and Ana Salguero. And we asked her about this very issue, and she confirmed that only the building official can issue the certificate of occupancy. If the planning director's fabrication of law were to actually be true, it would mean that all an applicant would need to do in order to change the use of a property without inspection or code review would be to argue that his intended use is less intense. This would mean that an office could turn into a nightclub with no input or review from the building official so long as they could prove it is a less intense use. Also under the planning director's reasoning, the Fountain Blue Hotel could convert to apartments with no inspection or code review. Obviously, this is an absurd outcome and is completely contrary to the public good, much less explicit Florida state law. In fact, in the planning director's own exhibits, he presents the proof that the building official never approved the change of use. Shown here is Exhibit CMG-G of the staff report. This is the BTR chain of approval within the city of Miami Beach, where each department must approve it. As can be seen in the green box, The building review of the original BTR application was approved okay per CO19-1320. It stands to reason we should check what Certificate of Occupancy CO19-1320 says. Shown here is another exhibit from the staff report, CMB-C, the Certificate of Occupancy CO19-1320. As can be seen from the called-out green section, the Certificate of Occupancy is clearly for Suite Hotel. While the BTR application was for apartment, the building review was passed only on the basis of it being an 8-unit suite hotel, specifically referenced by Certificate of Occupancy CO19-1320 in the notes. An application for change of use to apartment should have been automatically failed, at which point someone would have realized the disconnect and that the property had not been reviewed or inspected for its new use to ensure its compliance with fire code and other safety regulations. In fact, even on the Forge BTR application for apartments, a change of use is not ticked, meaning the application was purporting to be processed as its existing use, which was hotel. This also should have produced a fail from the very beginning. The net result of this series of errors cannot be the permanent loss of use of my property through no fault of my own. In fact, there is precedent for my property's case in front of this board in a matter involving 865 Collins Avenue. In a February 2018 case that came before this board, a packaged liquor retailer had not paid his BTR renewal fees despite doing so properly for his prior years in existence. While the BTR fees had been unpaid, an ordinance was passed that made it illegal for a packaged liquor retailer to exist in the location in which it existed. The planning director held that the retailer was not acting lawfully at the time that the zoning had changed because BTR fees had not been paid, and therefore is not considered a legal nonconforming use at the time of the change in law. The BOA held that the nominal BTR fees not being paid did not constitute a basis for permanently stripping a business owner of their livelihood. In the matter of 1330 15th Street, the planning director is basing his entire argument of voluntary abandonment of use of a property based on a single fraudulent document. The planning director has also deemed it unimportant that Florida law was violated in the change of use that occurred with no building official approval. The permanent loss of use of 1330 15th Street based on the fraud of a third party would be an unconscionable outcome. I respectfully ask that the board restore my property's active nonconforming use to hotel and for my hotel BTR to be restored. I thank the board for their consideration.
Okay. Thank you. I'll go ahead and call up Mr. Mooney and Nick Clergis from the city.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Nick Kalergis, and I'm with our city attorney's office. Today I'm appearing before you as counsel to the planning director. And the planning director is going to be leading this presentation and providing testimony, but I wanted to introduce his remarks and maybe assist the board with framing the question as a legal matter. The narrow question before you today is whether the use of Suite Hotel at 1330 15th Street may resume on the property. As of August 25th, 2020, Suite Hotels are now prohibited in the West Avenue Bayfront Overlay, which is where the property is located. The planning director's position, and you'll hear testimony from him today, is that the Suite Hotel use may not resume on the property because it was voluntarily abandoned, and because the use changed to residential apartments, which are a conforming use in this district. So in order to find that the suite hotel use may resume, the board under our code must find that the suite hotel use was never abandoned and that the suite hotel use was never changed to a non-transient residential apartment. To that end, I'd just like to read a few short provisions from the city code, which I think should guide the board's discussion. Our non-conforming regulations have include a statement of legislative intent, and I'll read in pertinent part. And the quote is, "The intent of this section is to encourage non-conformities to ultimately be brought into compliance with current regulations." The code also provides that the lawful use of a building existing under a prior code, quote, "may be continued, although such use does not conform to the provisions hereof." However, quote, "whenever a nonconforming use has been changed to a conforming use, the former nonconforming use shall not be permitted at a later date." I'll also read to you, "if there's an intentional and voluntary abandonment of a nonconforming use for more than 183 consecutive days, or if a nonconforming use is changed to a conforming use, said use shall lose its nonconforming status." The standard of review before you is de novo. So the board can take, the board is taking new evidence. This is a quasi-judicial public hearing. You may also hear from members of the public. However, under our code, the petitioner, in this case the owner of the property, has the burden of presenting evidence and of persuasion. In order to reverse or modify a decision of the planning director, a 5/7 vote of this board would be required. We have a short board because we have a seventh member who's not yet been appointed, but five affirmative votes are still required. And lastly, before I turn this over to the planning director, I just want to make one clarification. The only question before the board is whether a suite hotel use can resume on the property. This property was never licensed for transient short-term rentals. Short-term rentals are not permitted in this district and never were permitted in this district. The prior use on this property, the prior transient use on this property that the owner would like to resume was a suite hotel use. So if the board disagrees with the planning director, I just want to be clear that the use you would be permitting is suite hotel and not the transient rental, short-term rental of an apartment unit. Okay, and with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Mooney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick, and Mr. Chair, members of the board. Good morning. It's good to see everybody. I don't think I'm going to need the entire 15 minutes, but obviously, Steve, if I run over that, you'll let me know. The first thing I want to say, and I want to preface my presentation on this, is that there's been some written material that was submitted to you as part of the appellant's response that is insinuating that somehow our city staff impeded an investigation by our police department. And I just need to make it very clear on the record that neither myself nor anybody from my staff did any such thing, nor did we impede in any way any investigation by any agency. As a matter of fact, we've been very forthcoming, very truthful about this whole matter. And so I think that a lot of false hyperbole may be getting lost in some of these responses. And so I need to make that clear on the record simply because that was placed in the written record. I also want to provide a very brief summary of the difference, and this is germane to this discussion, between the short-term rental of an apartment, or commonly referred to as a transient apartment, and a suite hotel. A suite hotel was lawfully approved at this property by a building permit that converted the property in 2018. It was then established legally as a suite hotel and continued to operate legally as a suite hotel until the previous owner sent a letter into the city basically terminating their BTR because of the change in ownership. But other than the length of stay, which could be anywhere from daily to weekly to monthly, that's the only similarity between a transient apartment and a suite hotel. hotel units, suite hotel units, hostels, and short-term rental of apartments, they don't have any minimum rental period. Residential apartment that is not transient or not short-term rental, they do have a minimum rental period of 6 months and 1 day. But that's not the that's the only similarity that there is between a suite hotel and an apartment hotel. In fact, under Section 142.1105 of the city code, suite hotels have a number of other requirements that are not required of the short-term rental of an apartment. And this includes things such as a minimum percentage of total gross area being maintained as common space, the building having to contain a registration desk and lobby, the building having central air conditioning or flush-mounted wall units. There are even separate occupancy restrictions for apartments as opposed to suite hotels. And that's an important distinction because this property at 1330 15th Street did meet all of those requirements when it was approved in 2018 as a suite hotel. As it pertains to the application itself, I also need to be very clear that we, as the planning department, cannot make a determination as to whether or not a document has been forged. I'm not questioning the appellant's assertion, but I have not heard from the permit doctor, and I have not received any documentation from anybody else, either the police department or the finance department, formally advising me that that application is a fraud. That application, for better or for worse, was used to process the CU application. And in December of 2019, that new BTR application, which was for residential apartment, was processed through all appropriate city channels. And it was reviewed by the applicable building disciplines, the applicable code compliance disciplines, fire, and planning. As indicated by the appellant, and he is correct, only the building official can modify a certificate of occupancy. That's very clear. But for whatever reason, the building inspector in 2019 did approve this CU application to have a residential apartment. And it appears that the reason that that was done is because suite hotels and residential apartments are similar in terms of unit size and having kitchens. And likely that building inspector probably approved that, knowing that it was very similar in that regard. But either way, it was approved, and it did make its way through the process approved as a residential apartment. Now, the distinction between a residential apartment and a suite hotel is also germane to this discussion, because in some of the exhibits that were provided by the appellant, that provided a chronology of the discussions between his permit expediter and the city in May of 2020, appear to indicate that they were intending to actually permit this as an apartment, although in their minds they believed that it would be a transient apartment. And when you look at some, and I'll point to one particular email that was sent on May 29, 2020, and it was from Jenny from the permit doctor to the appellant, where the permit doctor says, "I would like to confirm if you'd still like to operate short-term rentals or keep it as full-time." The appellant says very clearly, "We would like to operate as a short-term rental." Then there was a follow-up later that day where the permit doctor said, "I will need a letter from you eventually confirming that you would like to apply for short-term rental usage of the property for the finance department." Now, clearly, the short-term rental of apartments was prohibited, and the CU that had been approved both in 2019 and that was issued in May of 2020 was for apartment, which is permitted, and there was no application for a short-term rental that was submitted at that time. In fact, if a short-term rental application had been submitted in either December of 2019 or in May of 2020, it would have been denied. And at that time, suite hotels were still permitted. And it's likely that the applicant would have modified the application and it would have become a suite hotel. However, they didn't do that. They continued on the path of the short-term rental. That BTR was issued, and then it was renewed again in 2020, in October of 2020. Actually, I think they paid the fees in December of 2020. And it wasn't until September of 2021 where there was another exchange. Again, this is between the permit doctor and between the appellant, where the appellant says to the permit doctor on September 23rd, 2021, is the type of BTR correct for our short-term rental use? Just wanted to double check. The permit doctor responds later that day, or actually the next day, and says it's for apartment use. The short-term rental was never completed. We never received a reply from our follow-up to you, and this was at the beginning of the pandemic. And so it's pretty clear by the evidence submitted by the appellant that no short-term rental or transient apartment application had been made until September of 2021. In October of 2021, after that was submitted, it was denied by the city, and that's when we were asked by a new permit runner to take a look at whether or not the previous use of suite hotel would in fact still apply. We put together a number of different timelines over the course of time, and those did change based upon new information provided, and we've always been very clear that we are responding to the information that is provided to us. Indeed, a lot of this information that I'm discussing today, I just received this week. And so what we're doing essentially is looking at something that happened 3 years ago now, but in terms of the actual application for the CU being approved, that CU application that was approved by planning and issued by the city for a non-transient apartment had been in place for about 18 months before the applicant realized that it wasn't exactly what he wanted. So it put us in a position of having to look at whether or not there really was an intention to maintain a suite hotel. And based upon the evidence that we saw at the time, that we've seen since then, and that we've seen to date, we simply couldn't reach that conclusion. Because as the planning director, I cannot authorize a CU for a use that is clearly and expressly prohibited by the code. Suite hotel has been a prohibited use since August of 2020. And even last year, it had been 2 years since that was a prohibited use. I did not see anything that led me to believe that there was always an intention to maintain a suite hotel use. By virtue of the information that has been provided, I think at best the applicant has established that their intention was to have a transient use.
Do you need 5 more minutes, Mr. Mooney?
Wrap up. No, actually, that pretty much sums it up. And so I'm happy to answer any questions from the board, or if the appellant has any questions for me, I can certainly answer
them. I think,
now.
Yeah, what would you, let's hold off on the questions. In the order we're going to do here is if the appellant would like to rebut at this point.
Yes.
Please come up to the podium. Thank you.
And how much time should I set?
Just a couple minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. Yeah. We said 5 minutes.
Sure.
If I could just make one suggestion. Typically, in other hearings before the board, the applicant can rebut after the public hearing in case there's anything in the public hearing that you'll want to respond to. If you'd like to ask any questions of the planning director, I think now would be the time. I mean, it's up to the board, but I think you should have an opportunity after the public hearing, to present final rebuttal.
Well, would we then be better to open up to the public hearing now? Because sometimes public will ask questions that board members might get answered by someone from the public.
I think as I see it, if the petitioner wants to ask any questions of the planning director, I think now would be the time, and then I would open to the public and then offer the petitioner rebuttal if that.
Yeah, that That's exactly how it's going to do it. So
okay.
He's going to rebut, and then I'm going to go ahead and open up to the public.
Okay.
That's how I present it. If you're okay with that, we'll do that. That's fine. So why don't we go ahead and give you 5 minutes?
Sure. I just have one question for the planning director. So can any hotel in Miami Beach now apply for apartment and be automatically approved with no review?
Under the current process, if somebody who has an existing hotel wants to convert to a residential apartment use, they would have to go through a change of use building permit application and then file a building permit application for that with the building official.
Okay, but that was not done in this case?
That was not done in this case, no.
Okay. Just as rebuttal, I just wanted to talk about the September 2021 emails that the planning director brought up, which is actually further evidence of the fraud that Gallo perpetrated on me, because he said, I'll take care of it back in May 29th, 2020, and then he clearly did not take care of it, and then he tried to blame it on me, saying that you did not submit a document. So I just wanted to put that for the record. Thank you.
All right, so Mr. Attorney, protocol, should we open up to public comment?
Yes, at this time, yes.
Okay, so why don't we open up to anyone in the chambers first that have public comment, if they want to come to the podium and give your name and address and be recognized. And why don't we do 3 minutes?
Sure.
3 minutes?
Hi, my name is Andrew Fiernick. I'm born and raised here in Miami, and I'm an owner and full-time resident at 1326 15th Street. I live directly next door to 1330, and as the corner unit, I have a clear, unobstructed view of their building all day and all night. I've owned my unit for 3 years, and before I tell you about 1330, I want to set the scene for you on this stretch of 15th Street we're discussing today between West Avenue and Bay Road. We are a very quiet and residential neighborhood, zoned RM1, the most residential, low-density zoning district on Miami Beach. Our neighborhood is filled with familiar faces, people who know each other, the dogs know each other, and we look out for one another. We're on the complete opposite side of Miami Beach, where party chaos is found, except at 1330. You can always count on their 1-, 2-, 3-night dwellers to make the most of their party visit to Miami Beach. 1330 has no on-site staff or supervision. Even the cameras were fake. Moreover, the owner and manager of 1330 do not live in the building and do not share this burden with us. Board members, when you hear today from my fellow neighbors and from me this morning that their low-cost Airbnb units caters to a crowd that pumps music through the day and night, openly uses hard drugs on the street, leaves their trash in front of our building, and parks in our assigned driveway spots, it's clear that the prerogative of preventing disturbing behavior and being good stewards in our residential neighborhood just isn't there. Our attempts to engage directly with the owners of 1330 to remedy these issues have been met with a not-my-problem attitude, suggesting instead that we contact local police if we have a problem with their guests. I have two additional short points to make for you today. First, as you're all aware, Miami Beach is gaining a dangerous reputation for belligerent partying. Expansion of these pockets of partying into our residential neighborhood drives away the long-term residents we need to build a community on Miami Beach. We may live where people love to vacation, but we are not a city of transient dwellers. All efforts through the city's enforcement arms should be taken to restrict unruly tourists. My final point in my testimony regards your task as board members in this hearing to determine whether 1330 abandoned a suite hotel or otherwise changed to a conforming use. I'd like to highlight page 15 in your staff report, referencing exhibit CMB-F. In this application for a certificate of use and business tax, the middle section of this document asks, type of business, be very specific. When given the opportunity to write short-term rental, instead the applicant crosses out short-term rental and instead deliberately writes in apartment building. But here's why this is no coincidence. Just months before this application was submitted in 2019, 1330 15th Street was the cover subject of a national New York Times piece exposing the building as an illegal Airbnb operation in a residential district. 1330 is the front page cover of this story. The article, titled Airbnb and Miami Beach Are at War, Travelers Are Caught in the Crossfire, highlights code enforcement's challenge to play whack-a-mole with bad actors and evicting people from these units. I have myself, from my own window, witnessed the eviction of tourists who I frankly feel badly for because they are not staying there expecting to be in the middle of a legal battle. When it comes to the question of willful abandonment or change, The New York Times piece drew attention to the questionable nature of their business dealings, and as a result, you can draw a straight line from this national expose to their lack of interest in promoting short-term rental and their application to the city, therefore crossing it out and improperly describing 1330 when directed to be very specific as just an apartment building. This behavior is no mistake and should not be rewarded. I intend to live in my unit for many years to come. I would sincerely look forward to welcoming neighbors into 1330 who are ready to live in an apartment building and ready to join our quaint, quiet street of 15th Street. I urge the board to affirm the decision of the planning director and deny 1330's appeal. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
Anyone else in the chambers before we go to see if anyone's on Zoom? Okay, do we have anyone on Zoom, Mr. Belush?
We have three callers. The first is Maria Quevedo.
Ms. Quevedo, I will need to...
Yeah, you want to go ahead and swear a minute?
Yes.
Yes, please raise your... Maria, please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes for you to address the board.
Yeah, actually, I am real estate in that area, and the reason why I bought to do not convert in as Airbnb is because to pretend that the area is still being quiet. You know, when you have a lot of people that coming in and out and in, it's not like a family area as it's supposed to be. That's why I say no to Airbnb in that area.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next caller we have is Viviana Rodriguez.
Yes.
Good morning, Ms. Rodriguez. Before you address the board, I need to swear you in. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes for you to address the board.
Okay, I've been living in the building since November last year, and it's a very quiet, beautiful neighborhood, and it's true that we have disturbances next door with people moving in and out. We also have problems with parkings because since that area has only parking by permit, our building has our parkings, and people tend to use our parkings, which means we don't have our parking spots available when we need them. We also have trash issues in terms of we have trash left outside because I understand they are not people that live there permanently, so they are not aware of what the feeling of being in a quiet neighborhood is in Miami Beach. So, yeah, I vote no to having an Airbnb in the neighborhood that seems to be pretty much a family neighborhood.
Ms. Rodriguez, what is your address?
1326 15th Street, Apartment 1.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Andy Scloyer.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Scloyer. Before you address the board, I need to swear you in, so please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, and I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes for you to address the board.
Thank you very much. I don't think I'll need 3 minutes. So I'm an owner in that same building as Xander Futernick and as Vivian just articulated, 1326 15th Street, Unit 3. And I think Xander Futernick articulated everything very, very well. So I support everything that he described. And you know, in conclusion, urge the board to reject the appeal and affirm the planning director. And I believe there's strong community support for the planning director as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Is that it for Zoom?
We have another speaker with her hand raised now, Nicholas Peirano.
Yes, good morning. I'm Nicholas.
Good morning, Nicholas. I'll need to swear you in before you address the board, so please... raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes. And also, if you could please let the board know in addition to your full name, your address.
Yes, good morning. My name is Nicholas Ferrano. I'm an owner at 1341 15th Street, apartment 101. My window gives immediately onto the street, and the last few years I've been eyewitness to everything that Mr. Fidernick has mentioned. Trash, loud noise, unruly behavior. I believe there's no security, nobody to checking the transient that live there. And this is a residential street with children, with people who live and work in Miami. And I feel that this Airbnb is definitely a big problem for us. It's bad for our reputation. I've seen drug use. I've seen quarrels between residents. They spend time in the street playing loud music from their cars and so forth. So I do vote against the renewal of the transient property there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody we have a couple else? More people with their hand raised now. The first is Ahmed.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Good morning, sir. Ahmed, I need to swear you in before you address the board. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
And I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes, and when you introduce yourself, please state your full name and your address for the board. Thank you.
My name is Ahmed Mustafa. I live in 1326 15th Street, apartment number 3. I've been living here since 2020, and it's always been a problem with trash, with loud music, with drug use, and our parking spots, and this is a very quiet neighborhood with families, with kids, with working people, and we have a lot of sleepless nights, and I support all my neighbors for not proceeding with this building. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more person with their hand raised now. Michael R.
Good morning. My name is Mike Roloff.
And Mr. Roloff, before you start, I need to swear you in before you address
absolutely.
The board. Do you please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll be giving in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
The whole truth, nothing but the truth, yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to set the clock for 3 minutes, and if you could also advise the board of your address.
My address is 1481 Bay Road, apartment 8, which faces with the bedroom exactly to the property's backyard. And we're facing the same problems, basically. Everything that all the others already mentioned is facing us. Except that we actually had to call the police a couple times for disturbance in the backyard till like 6 o'clock in the morning. Then we had just last night, we had police around the building because somebody was mistaking our building as an Airbnb. So I don't know which Airbnb, if it was the building next door or if it was one of the other ones. But yeah, it's really no condition to live in, and we're all paying high rents if we're not owning, so I'm against this.
So that, we have no other callers online.
Okay, I think we do it. One additional comment in
yeah,
the chamber.
I apologize.
Name and address, please.
Yeah, my name is Rafael Corrine. I'm a renter at 1326 15th Street. I mean, I'm going to echo what everybody has already said, but I do think that speaks volumes to just like what the living conditions are like, you know, because of this illegal short-term rental right next door to us. When I initially moved into my apartment, I was surprised to find out that there was this problematic short-term rental taking place, you know, knowing that that is not allowed on Miami Beach. And then over the following months, that surprise turned into frustration because I constantly had to deal with the loud and indecent people who were staying in the apartment beside us. So whilst, you know, our neighborhood is very peaceful and it's very family friendly, we walk our dogs, the kids are walking around, all that beautiful stuff, the next door neighbors are the complete opposite. They are loud, they openly take illegal drugs. The amount of times I've walked by and I just smell illegal drugs or I see pills being popped, it's horrifying and not an environment that, you know, kids should be exposed to, let alone adults. And our complaints to the owners, who do not even live here, fall on completely deaf ears. One time, a lady who was staying at the Airbnb next door was parking in my spot, and as it's very clear, this happens all the time. They park in our spots all the time because there's nothing monitoring, you know, what they're doing there as they're staying there. And I kindly asked her to move, and she became very volatile and confrontational. This interaction, along with the complaints mentioned above, are not acceptable and should not be allowed in our community. As Miami Beach continues to gain this negative, you know, representation of like partying and, you know, violence, we should strive as a community to deter this type of crowd and behavior. I don't want to feel unsafe in my home. I don't want to have to look out the window and see like who's out there. So do I have to walk my dogs the other way so I don't have to deal with that confrontation or the drugs that I smell? And I really hope we can stop this unlawful behavior and deter any future violence and drugs in our neighborhood. In order to come prepared for my testimony today, and this is my final point, I read and analyzed the staff report. Conscious of time, I would like to highlight one particularly unfaithful conduct from the owners of 1330. Page 3 and page 8 both reference Exhibit CMBI, where the city's finance department confirms that all taxes paid from late 2019 to the present have been for residential apartment use. It is not only disingenuous to knowingly pay a lower tax for a different use, but this further provides evidence of willful abandonment of a hotel, as the owners themselves stated in their BTR building, filing, excuse me. I'm a little nervous. Thank you for listening to my neighbors and me this morning, and I hope you will vote to deny the appeal and side with your own planning director's decision. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that being said, no one else on Zoom, no one else here in the chambers for public comment. I'm going to move to go ahead and close the public comment. What we'll do at the next phase, and again, you know, to keep a control, please, through the chair, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to the board.
Mr. Chairman, before that, I would suggest we give a chance for the petitioner to respond if he wants to rebut anything that's been said from public comment.
Okay, we can do that, and then would we also give that Mr. Mooney that opportunity to after that?
No.
Just the appellant?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we open it up to board for questions? Thank you.
Yes, I'd just like to respond to the public comments. Regarding the character of the neighborhood, actually there are two short-term rental buildings on the same block. 1321 15th Street, which is directly across the street, and 1443 West Avenue. Actually, in 1600 Bay Road is also a short-term rental building. So the characterization of the block as a completely long-term apartment is incorrect. Regarding any complaints about noise or parties or anything like that, we have never received a noise violation or party-related violation in my entire ownership of the property. I must take specific issue with this New York Times article that the gentleman brought up. While it's very salacious, it predates my purchase of the property by over 6 months, so it has nothing to do with me. Regarding the taxes, on the response to planning director, the written response that I submitted this week, you can see I actually did pay monthly resort taxes on a temporary account to the city. So, yeah, I believe that's all my points.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so with that being said, we're going to open up to board questions through the chair, and then depending on who you have a question for, should I have the appellant come up or just bring up as questions are and who they're directed to, Mr. City Attorney? What's proper
protocol? As questions are directed.
As questions are asked and pointed to. Okay, so I'll open up to the board. One at a time, Mr. Asian, you want to go ahead and start, please?
Yeah. You mentioned Aaron Resnick, and I'm not sure his involvement in it, but he might have donated to my campaign, and I don't know if there's any.
Yeah, you want
to? Yeah, Aaron Resnick was my former attorney.
Oh, okay.
But I terminated him. So.
Okay, so I don't. Just wanted to clarify. And can you explain? Who is this person that you're saying is trying to sabotage you? What's that story? I don't understand.
Well, that's, I believe, a separate matter than before this board. But I reported this crime to the city of Miami Beach on December 5th, 2022, as I said. And I had a lengthy communication with Officer Aiken at the Miami Beach Police Department. He indicated that he spoke to Ricardo Guzman at the planning director plan director's office, and he told him not to investigate the case, which I thought was very strange because I made a fraud complaint against a private citizen. So for somebody in the city of Miami Beach, working at the city of Miami Beach, to advise a police officer to not investigate seemed very strange to me. And I've reported this matter to the inspector general also.
Okay, Mr. Mooney, you
yeah, wanna, just, you just rebut that? For the record, Mr. Guzman never said that to Detective Aiken. I also had a discussion with the inspector general. I conveyed that to him. But I don't know where this has emanated from, but Mr. Guzman never said such thing.
Now, just to be clear, you know, to pick while we're on this question around this forgery, you hired this permit company, correct?
Permit, yeah, the
okay,
permit.
So they were in charge of everything, the document,
correct.
Getting it signed and everything.
Correct.
So I'm just trying to think, what would their intent or someone's intent do to be that? Why, you know, cause that's why Mr. Astion asked that question. I don't want you to have to go back.
I can't tell you why a criminal
there's
got to
be intent why someone would do it.
But my guess is that he made a big mistake and then...
Well, mistake is different. Making
a mistake
is one
thing.
He,
and then he probably realized that he couldn't do what he said he was going to do, whatever the case is. That's why he crossed out short-term rental and wrote apartment building on that application.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Just for the record, what you just said is a mistake. To me, it's not.
Yeah, no.
Crossing out and making a mistake is different than someone committing a forgery.
Oh, it's absolutely a crime.
Well, you hired someone and they made a mistake. Let me keep it open for questions. Mr. Nadler?
Yeah, surprise, surprise. I have a handful of questions for a number of different people.
Sure.
And this wasn't going to be one of them, but since it came up, Mr. Mooney? Is it true that you have no firsthand knowledge of what Mr. Guzman did or did not say to the police?
Correct. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of Mr. Guzman's discussions with anybody in the police department, only what I've discussed with Mr. Guzman.
Right, so it sounds like this would be hearsay testimony, but where's Mr. Guzman right now? Why is he not here to address this?
He's normally does not attend Board of Adjustment meetings. I didn't see any reason to produce him for this meeting.
Okay, thank you. I have a few questions. Oh, actually, while you're here, because I did have another important question for you, in my opinion. This document that was allegedly forged, if the non-forged version, the document that the applicant is saying or the appellant is saying he intended to submit, if that, in fact, had been submitted, how would that change things?
Again, this happened, you know, well over 3 years ago now at this point. But the application that the appellant said he intended to have submitted, the first page, indicated that the use of the property was hotel, which at that time would have been permitted. Now, it's also important to point out that there's a line that says state your business in full. It didn't indicate that. So if that first page that the appellant says he desired to have submitted was submitted and the CU application was then for hotel, we would have then put on the comments, this is for suite hotel, but we would have been able to approve it as a suite hotel.
And presumably it would have been, and he would be grandfathered into a suite hotel as of today. If that's how history had unfolded.
If the CU in 2019, and then when it was issued in May of 2020, had been for a suite hotel, then yes, as long as that use was lawfully maintained, then yes, he would have been grandfathered, even though there was an ordinance in October of 2020 that prohibited future suite hotels.
Has the subject property been run and maintained as a suite hotel over the last 3-4 years?
That I can't answer. I don't know how the property has been operated since December of 2019. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of exactly how the owner has been operating their property.
Okay, thank you. Should I keep going or?
I mean, if you have other questions, go. I mean,
yeah, I have,
we'll come back.
I'm just crossing
if we need
off
to.
The
I
list.
Just, yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Go ahead.
A few for staff. Thank you, sir. The appellant stated that if we deny or I guess uphold the plan director's decision, we'd forever be killing his business. Is it correct that if we deny the appeal, the appellant would have the right to go to the court system in Miami-Dade County and further fight this issue?
Well, either party can appeal the decision of this board to the next level. So, yes, it may not be over today, depending upon who's the prevailing party.
So we're not the final say, necessarily?
No, but it would be reviewed by the appellate court based upon the record that's before you today. It would not be de novo on appeal. It would be based on the record that's been developed here today.
And I think we're going to stay together on two more questions. My other two questions for staff. In regard to the record, and now I'm getting off of the substance of the issue, and I don't know if this creates an issue, but two things. One is we've been swearing people in, and each time you say, please raise your right hand. And the reason we swear people in is so that we can rely on their testimony as being truthful. It seems like raising your right hand is part of creating that swearing in and our ability to rely on that testimony. We have no ability to see that they're raising their right hand. Is there any law in Florida that says, you know, that you can swear someone in without and telling them to raise their right hand and rely and trust them that they're doing that before they've actually been sworn in?
Well, unfortunately, post-COVID, we're now in this hybrid situation where the video is not activated for Zoom bombers or other things like that. So it's basically on the honor system, and you can give the testimony the weight that it deserves. I can't.
If someone's going to lie, if they raise their right hand, they're going to lie regardless.
Well, I mean, if
it's part
I guess
of
you're saying
the formality of the whole proceeding.
Well, I mean, we're doing the honor system on an oath. That seems bizarre to me.
I think if I could just offer, sure. I represent the four boards in some, you know, in most days. But what we've been doing is with witnesses who are in the room, we swear in the whole room, right? Which Mr. Rothstein did at the beginning of the meeting. With Zoom callers, we get their oath on record. We get them to affirmatively swear that they'll be telling the truth. I think, you know, raising the right hand, I mean, you're right, they're not on video, but we do have their affirmative oaths on the record, and those would be in a transcript if one were taken.
I understand. I just assume there must be a reason for raising your right hand. Otherwise, we don't do it. And I don't know if any of them raise the right hand. And then as far as the 5-7, I think it's in the code or in the statute or whatever it is. this is hyper-technical. Obviously, you could have, it doesn't have to be 5-7, it could be 6-7 or 7-7, but it doesn't say you need at least 5 votes. And there's not 7 people here, which I think mathematically decreases the chances of getting 5 affirmative votes. So how can the code or the statute say 5-7 when we're not providing 7?
Well, we don't have a full board, but it still remains as 5 out of the board. In this particular case, it's 5 out of 6.
It's not what the code says. It says 5-7.
We don't have the board members. The commissioner hasn't. The commission hasn't appointed the 7th.
Right, we got to get that position filled. We'll talk about the end.
Okay.
Anything else?
And then I'll come back after for the. Yeah,
okay.
Not for now.
Go ahead, Mr. Nadler. I always say Mr. Nadler. I'm looking at you when I said Mr. Nadler. Mr. Arison, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. So, just before I start, just by way of comment. I don't think that this board's obligation is to weigh in on the business model of Airbnb. I think what we have to do here and our obligation is determine whether the non-conforming use here was abandoned. It's
lower your mic a little bit so it's closer to
say it's just that limited issue, whether it's been abandoned. And it seems to me from the presentation that we really need to focus on CMBF, which is page 15 of 23 of the documentation that was provided to us. But I have a couple questions of staff, maybe Mr. Mooney, before I get into CMBF. Mr. Mooney, can you do you know who actually submitted the BTR application? Was it the appellant? Was it permit doctor? Who submitted it?
I don't have firsthand knowledge of that. It appears from the evidence that's been submitted that it was the permit doctor that submitted the application to the finance department. But I don't have firsthand knowledge of that.
Okay. Let me ask you also, with regard to the renewal, what is the process of renewal? Is there a mailing that goes out on the renewal? Does it go to the owner? Does it go to the permit doctor? What's the process of that?
My understanding is that if there's no change in the use, that if the use is remaining exactly the same, that the finance department sends out renewal notices to either the property owner or their designated representative. And then the property owner pays a fee and is automatically renewed for the following year. It's not routed to planning or any other discipline. It's just renewed.
And what happened here? Excuse me, I have a cold, so my voice
okay.
is a little...
It appears from the evidence that the renewal went out in late September of 2020 and that the fee was paid and that the BTR was renewed sometime around December of 2020.
So the renewal went out to the owner?
I believe so. I would need finance to confirm that, but I believe that that's the standard protocol.
Does renewals ever go out to the permit doctor? Or
I think unless they've been, unless another entity has been designated as the representative, I believe that renewal notices typically go out to the property owner.
Thank you, Mr. Mooney. So I, some questions of the appellant. Let's stay on the same subject matter here. Did you receive the renewal?
I did. I don't recall exactly how I did receive it, but yes, I did receive it.
And the renewal and the annual fee was paid, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Did you review it?
No, I got a notice in the mail I needed to pay. I paid. That's basically it. And at that time, I believe hotels were still obligated to be closed by law under COVID. So, yeah, there was no operations either.
This was a renewal for the business tax receipt, right?
Right, correct.
And when you looked at it, you didn't notice what the business was?
Well, I mean, again, I had relied on the permit doctor's advice and help in transferring the license, and he said he was going to take care of it. So I assumed that he was still either in the midst of taking care of it or, you know, this was the proper license. Also, again, because hotels were closed at that time by law, I figured that, you know, maybe it's still working its way through the system. You know, the city was backed up because of COVID. You know, there was a lot of other things going on.
What was working its way through the system?
The permit, the last communication I had with the permit doctor there was him saying he was going to take care of it, right? That he was going to, because they incorrectly issued the BTR for apartment. Then he asked me as at the same time, do you still want short-term rental? I said, obviously. And then that was the last communication I got from him, so I assumed it was still working its way through the system.
So you received a renewal for an apartment as a business. You paid it based upon the assumption that it was the incorrect status and the permit doctor was working for you.
Was correcting it, correct.
You didn't contact the city or say anything with regard to that?
No, because the permit doctor was the one who sent me the BTR in the first place. I never even got the BTR from the city. I was communicating directly with Tania Williams and Jeannie Castor, and then all of a sudden, 10 days later, the permit doctor is the one who sends me the BTR. So, I mean, he was supposed to be my conduit to the city.
This was going on for a year, right?
I'm sorry?
This was going on for a year that the permit
yes,
doctor
right,
was
because,
supposedly
because
trying to
because I bought the property
this.
Right at the end of 2019, and then COVID started, so then the city was closed for a while, and then when they reopened is when Tania Williams and Jeannie Castor emailed me. So, yeah, there's a big time gap because of COVID. And that definitely did not help.
Okay. Do you have the document in front of you?
Sure. Which one?
What's been exhibit CMBF?
Page 15 of 23.
CMBF.
The package right. that was sent out to the
board. Yes. Yep.
So if I heard you correctly, You're saying the first page, one of two, you're suggesting is a forgery.
Correct.
But page two is accurate.
Correct. Page two on the actual BTR application I showed you and the fraud and the forgery are identical. So he took my actual signature page and just put a new page one on it in order to make it look like I created this document.
Did he tell you he was doing that?
Oh, absolutely not.
When you signed page two, had you looked at page one?
No, no, no. What he did, I sent him this document on November 18, 2019. He must have printed it out and then did it. I didn't sign it twice.
Okay, so when you say you sent it to him, when you sent it to him, was it page one and two?
No, it was one document.
Or just page two?
It was one document, page one and two.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you sent him page one and two, and you're suggesting now that what he filed was a different page one.
Correct.
Do you have a copy of the page one and page two that you sent to him?
Yes. Yeah. If you could pull up the presentation again, I could show you.
Which is your document?
That's exhibit the one that I sent him. Is exhibit A of what you received today.
Do you mean without it being crossed out, Mr. Aronson? The one that he signed? Yeah. That's not. You have one that's not crossed out.
Correct. The one I actually filled out is exhibit A of what
was that in? Because that's so the board. Exhibit A, that's in Exhibit A?
Yeah, what I handed out today.
Okay, am I missing something here? Yeah, but this is the...
In the one you gave us, where it says type of business, be very specific. I'm looking at it. It doesn't say anything.
But the hotel box is checked.
I mean, Mr. Mooney's already testified on what would have happened if that document had been submitted as it is.
Excuse me, one second. Let me just get it. So, are you still communicating with the permit doctor?
No. I mean, he cut off communication with me. I asked him because I really wanted to know what he did with my actual application. I contacted him. Obviously, he did not respond. I mean, I'm probably going to have to file a lawsuit against him. But the problem is he probably doesn't have insurance or assets, so it's likely a waste of time. But like I said, I'm still pursuing this with the police because this man is definitely a criminal.
Questions, Stevenson?
Just give me one more moment. You say you reported this to the police?
Yes.
It was reported in December of 22. Was that what you said?
Correct. It took a very long time for me to actually get the forged BTR application because we went back and forth. I had another attorney on the case. It took a long time to actually finally get that application document. Once I saw that document, I knew it was a forgery. That's at which time I requested actually my former attorney, Steve Davis, to put me in touch with Miami Beach Police.
When did you request the document?
When did I request the document?
Yeah.
Well, we filed a records request, I believe, in September. We filed a public records request, but even before that, we had requested it through back channels. I believe C.D. Davis, my current permit expediter, had requested it. I mean, we asked for proof many times, but
when did you first request it?
Well, again, C.D. Davis was the one actually procuring the documents, and actually he's also the one who is emailing Mr. Mooney and Mr. Guzman on my behalf, so it would have been him. So I don't know exactly when he did that.
Was it after the BTR renewal?
It was probably after Damien Gallo told me, or when he made up the story that I didn't follow through with the short-term rental, that's when I really started to investigate and see what exactly happened. So sometime thereafter.
Okay, I have no further questions.
Okay, Ms. Malikoff?
Short-term rental of apartment units is prohibited in RM1. RM1 in the city of Miami Beach is residential multifamily units consisting primarily of apartment buildings. At one point, suite hotels were allowed. The West Avenue Neighborhood Association and many residents of the area complained bitterly that they did not want suite hotels or any transient use because it's a quiet residential area. Subsequently, in 2020, suite hotels were prohibited. What's before us today really is, can a suite hotel now be permitted? It is, in my belief, it cannot. Short-term rental of apartment units is prohibited in the zoning district RM1. And I do not see where this particular property or this appellant has made any strong case saying that he's still entitled to transient apartments. It's clearly prohibited and never was, well, when suite hotels were permitted briefly, then that's considered transient. But once they were prohibited, it's no longer allowed in that area. I really have no questions. I just want to cite it, what the subject is based on the zoning code of the city of Miami Beach. That's all.
Thank you, Ms. Malikoff. Mr. Silvers?
I don't have any questions.
Mr. Ashton, did you go?
I did.
Yep. You have any additional questions?
I do not.
Mr. Nagler?
Yeah, I want to give you. I want to pause and give everyone. Oh, it turns out I might have actually been one of the quicker ones. But
go for it,
sir. Have you submitted or presented any evidence today to us that you submitted the unforged, let's say, the intended document to the permit doctor? Meaning, do you have?
Yes.
Do you have an email that shows the attachment or anything of that nature?
Yes,
where is that?
It's actually in my written response to planning director. It's Exhibit B, which is it was 200 pages long of emails. That's why I didn't print it out for you all today. But that shows the email that I sent with the correct BTR application to Damien Gallo.
Okay. please provide for us all elements of use that have been going on for the last 3 to 4 years, ongoing.
Not ongoing. The building has been shut for months now.
By the city?
Yes. I mean, we received violations. We decided to shut.
When was it shut?
End of February.
Of 2023?
Correct.
Okay, so please describe all elements of a suite hotel that had been ongoing at this property from the time you purchased it up until February of 2023?
I marketed the units for short-term rental on Airbnb. I received the proper state licensing from the state of Florida. I did submit resort tax returns to the finance department. Which other elements would you like?
Well, and the actual use, had it been actually used as a suite hotel during that time?
Yes. At no point were long-term leases ever signed or was it ever marketed for long-term lease. It was all actually the sole method of it ever being marketed was on Airbnb.
All right, Mr. Mooney? Are the elements that the appellant just described for us elements of use of a suite hotel?
A suite hotel can be leased on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. A suite hotel is not obligated to have a minimum lease period of 6 months and a day.
Are the same question. You don't have to say yes or no, but I'd appreciate you not to define it for me, but to actually address the specific elements he provided. Are those elements of a suite hotel use?
Suite hotels, you can market suite hotels as a transient use. So if somebody has a suite hotel, they can market it on a transient capacity, on a transient basis.
Again, you have no evidence that from the time he purchased the property up until February of 2023, that it wasn't actually being used as anything other than a suite hotel. Is that correct?
I don't have any firsthand knowledge of how it was being used. So I would rely upon the appellant in terms of how he said he's been using his property.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, so thank you, both of you. So I would just say that there's no evidence. There's no reason to know for sure that if someone moved in there for the rest of their lives, they won't be using or selling drugs or playing loud music. I don't know if that's solely for someone who's transient. Yeah, it certainly seems like the evidence before us points to an intended use of a suite hotel and not abandonment. On the other hand, I don't know if we have sufficient evidence to determine if there was a forgery or not. And that's certainly one of the, I think, use and the document are the two items that reflect the appellant's intent. And the evidence of use before us seems pretty unrebutted. And the evidence of forgery is, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not a detective.
We're not here to make that decision, so.
Well, I mean, I think that goes, I think the decision is whether or not he abandoned it. And he didn't abandon it. He did not abandon it, is my understanding, if he intended to submit the document that he says he intended to submit.
I'll add short comments. I would agree with you that there's no doubt that he intended it to be a suite hotel. I have an issue with the claim of a forged document when you hire a well-known permit expediting company in the city that's done this for a long time and saying, you know, why would anyone cross something out and change it? There's no intent. There's no reason. It doesn't make sense. When I had asked questions earlier, actually, I think the appellant did actually say, oh, you made a mistake. Well, there's a very big difference between a mistake and someone forging a document, and I find it hard to believe that anyone on city staff would forge a document. Also, there were chances to catch this. I mean, Mr. Aronson was, I think, very good in his question that, you know, you get a renewal. Did you pay it? Yes. Did you review it? No, I just paid it and sent it in. Well, when I send a check for anything, I see what I'm paying for, and I reviewed the document. So there was another opportunity there to catch that if there was an issue. So based on the change in zoning and not being allowed, I'm going to be the recommendation is to affirm the decision of the planning director and that the appeal be denied. Any other comments? Ms. Malkoff, then we'll do Ms.
Just, this has nothing to do with what's before us. It's the fact there were only six people. This is for anybody who's watching or listening, we need a CPA. If there are any CPAs who are interested in serving on the Board of Adjustment, we would welcome you. Please speak to any of the commissioners or the mayor.
You just took away the last item I had before we adjourned, so I guess I don't have to say that. Yeah, there's got to be a good CPA in town. You know, reach out. Reach out. So, Mr. Aronson?
So, I agree with the chair here. The issue before us is whether or not there was an abandonment of a non-conforming use. And the forgery presentation is just not persuasive to me. This man was a legitimate agent. He was hired by the appellant to proceed. He put an application together. I have trouble comprehending that this application was submitted without a copy having been provided to the appellant. But in any event, the results of the application were clear in the renewal that came. this is the dispositive document, the business tax receipt of what kind of business it is. I mean, if you're running a bar and you pay a business tax, it says you're running a bar. If you're operating an apartment, you pay a business tax. The tax is for an apartment. So, I mean, even if the appellant did not look at the renewal and just made assumptions, that's still inadequate. I agree with the chair in terms of the analysis here. I'm not persuaded that this nonconformity was not abandoned.
Okay. Any other comments from the board?
One question for counsel, so I can figure out how I'm going to vote here. Is there a distinction between intent of abandonment and actually abandoning it? Does it matter? If, let's say, he didn't intend to abandon it, but he actually did on paper.
Well, I believe the way the code's written is that it's an intentional abandonment. So I would have to make that affirmative decision under my business model to say, I'm no longer going to be a suite hotel. I want to be an apartment house.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
But for the change in the city code, he probably could have went back. That would be his intent if that new business model didn't work out. But as far as a non-conforming use, it has to be an intentional abandonment.
Yeah, okay. So that's where it cuts me. I don't think the evidence is that he did not intend
to. Okay, so with that being said, I'd ask if anyone would like to entertain a motion on this matter.
I would move to affirm the staff.
Okay. We have a move by Mr. Arison to affirm. Again, I'll read the recommendation. In view, the staff recommends the decision of the planning director be affirmed and that the subject appeal be denied. Do I hear a second? Second by Ms. Malikoff. Mr. Belushi, could you please take a roll call?
Sure, I'll do a roll call. Ms. Malikoff?
Yes.
Mr. Arison?
Yes.
Mr. Asion?
Yes.
Mr. Silvers?
Yes.
Mr. Nagler?
No.
Mr. Goldberg?
Yes.
The motion passes 5-1. The appeal's been denied.
Okay. Next meeting is, what's the next meeting date, Mr. Belushi?
It is, just a second.
I didn't put that in my outline. It's the only thing I didn't put. And I just want to reaffirm what Ms. Malikoff said. Anyone out there that's listening, we've had this opening for a while, a CPA opening on the board. You know, please, if you know anyone, make a recommendation. You know, it's great to give back, you know, community service, and, you know, it'd really be great if we can fill that spot.
But and our next agenda is, our next meeting is June 2nd, okay. And we do have one application on the agenda.
Okay. June 2nd, and with that being said, motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for your time. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll see you next month. So,